Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Customer-Led Groove Show, where we discuss and share the best practices and the latest trends in customer marketing, advocacy, and customer-led growth. Today's episode is brought to you by BASE, a pioneer in B2B marketing and the industry's first CLG ecosystem for customer-led marketers, sales, and product professionals. Okay, let's welcome the CLG team and today's guests.
Hi there, Scott Wilder here, and welcome to another episode of Customer-Led Groove, orchestrated by BASE. Today I'm with Erica Kuhl. Erica, hi.
Hi.
So Erica, I'm sure a lot of you know about her, a pioneer in the community space. Right now she has her own consulting firm. She's an investor, and she's just, one of the reasons I wanted to get her on board here is that, you know, she's like been a mentor and a guide for many people in the industry. And she also, as a lot of you know, worked at Salesforce for about 11 years.
So, no, actually 17 and a half years.
Oh, okay.
Don't rob me of any of my years there. I earned them all.
Exactly. Do you get like stars for each year? Like, what'd you get for your 10th anniversary?
Not very much. So we get, because I was there so early, none of these programs even existed until I'd probably almost been there a decade. But I think 3 years, you get a little glass boogie board. At 5 years, you get like a long board. And at 10 years, you get like, or you get short board, then you get a long board. And you don't get a whole lot of anything else, quite honestly. It's you earn an unpaid sabbatical, which is like, what is that even? Yeah. But yeah, it's thick is some work in that field. But not a whole lot. No Rolex, no fancy cars. It's just a little statue.
Man, they got to change that. I mean, 17 years at one place is especially,
it was a big deal. I got so much out of that company. So I'm not, I actually was like, you don't have to print up my statue because that hurts the atmosphere. Like, what I mean? That's like, save my plastic trophy. I'm good. I'll get a high five from my boss. It's good.
When you think back at that experience, mm-hmm. what are like one or two things that you're just like, that impacted my career the most?
Oh gosh. That's a great question. There's so many, but I think that for me, I've always been, I guess, not somebody that fits into the exact corporate mold. I never thought I actually would go into corporate world at all. But I started as a teacher at Salesforce. A lot of people don't even know that. They only know me from the work I did on the community. And but I did start as an application instructor teaching system admins how to use Salesforce back in the day when it was pretty easy to use. I could never teach it now, or even way later, it got very sophisticated. But that was super impactful to me in my career, because that's when the little glint of what could be happened, because I knew more than anyone in the company, honestly, about the product, because I heard every single question. And at the time, the employees had to take my class too, because there was no employee training. So I really knew that product in and out. I knew what the customer was suffering from, and I watched magic happen in the classroom. And then not only that, but if you remember back in those days, cloud computing wasn't a thing. Digital transformation wasn't a thing. And so not only did they come to San Francisco to learn a piece of technology, they were part of a movement. And they maybe didn't even know it at the time, but we were mm-hmm. charging forward with this world of using tech in a very different way that didn't include installed software. And so it was, we connected in deeper ways than just a teacher to a student learning tech. And we were on this digital transformation before that was a thing. And so for me, that was really transformational. It's choosing to take that job of teaching is what then ultimately led to me pioneering the community there, because I couldn't handle leaving my students, and couldn't handle them being solo trying to do this massive thing on their own. And so that's why I ultimately created it. So I'd say that was like one of the early biggest ones, I'd say.
I love the fact you used the word movement, because that's what I think about in successful communities. It's just, it's a movement. It's more than just fixing a product, you know? There's a higher calling.
Yeah. In a lot of cases, there is. And it doesn't have to be something that you even know about, right? At the beginning, you know, it's something that, you know, you can, it can evolve into that. It can start with something and then turn into that. But in this case, I think I didn't know it was a movement, honestly. But now when I look back and I think about it, it 100% was. It was very, you know, and I still do here and there hear from Mark. And he attributes it that way too. And he's hooked me up with some companies that are trying to do that same thing, like trying to make big change in industries that are notoriously not very open to change. And he talks about what we did in those early days as a movement. So it's cool. It's really fun.
Nice. So one of the things I want to talk about today is, where's community fit in the larger organization? And then kind of move into how community, you know, before the call today, we talked about I used the metaphor of, it's like a puzzle, right? There's different customer facing activities. And so where does community play, or where does it fit in that puzzle? And I'm not very good at puzzles. So hopefully
I love puzzles
today, but
I love that. I think close to 13 puzzles over COVID, which I Mod Podged and, you know, framed and hung them up in my basement. All the puzzles. We love puzzles.
Wow. You are a puzzle person.
Yeah. So there's just something, you know, to me about like having something chaotic and like forming it into something perfect. So that's the thing. Sorry. Go on. No. Ask your question.
No, I like that. No, it's something that I just like the idea. It's a perfect metaphor for community as well, right? Mm-hmm. It's like just have all these. So when you think about community in the organization, and you've worked with a lot of different companies, you know, after you're, you know, as a consultant and as a guide, how do you think about where it goes in the organization? I'm sure a lot of people ask you that question.
Oh, yeah. So many. And I really think that the question is a difficult one, because it does take a lot of work. And it's work that a lot of people skip over, and they're just like, stick it somewhere and figure it out later. Or jump right to tactics, or jump right into tools. And they don't take a moment and a beat to think about where it's going to serve best. And I think a lot of people that know me, you know, they'd say like, I think the dream state is that it's allowed to serve the whole company. And I still feel that way, but I'm realistic, and we're not quite there as an industry yet where it can be a standalone organization in most cases. Some people get that luxury, and that's awesome. But at least in the companies that I've been working with lately, and definitely when I was at Salesforce, it did have to live somewhere, but I just made certain that it could breathe enough so that it could serve other parts of the business as well as the direct organization where it's put. So I guess for me, I try to think about what it is that the community is trying to solve for, and what is the main thing it's aligned to in the organization. So hopefully you have a view into, and if you don't, you should get a view into the company goals, the highest level company goals, and then be able to understand where it makes most sense for you to align the community to achieve those company goals, but also be able to achieve the customer's goals or whatever your community is. And so that's one of my biggest indicators, is where is it going to be the most successful? Where is it going to get the, where the value is going to be the most aligned? Because in my early days at Salesforce, I grew up the community in a place where I just happened to live when I pulled the trigger on creating the community. It wasn't actually a strategic thing where I picked marketing to create the community. And that I struggled because of that. But this was like, so long ago, there was no Erica to tell me or no Scott to tell me like what to do. I just was doing something. But now I know that my goals at the time were just so misaligned that I wasn't ever going to really recognize its fullest potential, because it was just, I was fighting an uphill battle for a long time until I moved it into another organization. So now that I can think that way, I'm just like, where can it align the most? And in an early day, where is it going to get the most money? You know, it's sad to say that it sort of comes down to that, but like, you need to be prioritized. And organizations that are prioritized have the money and I want it to live. So that doesn't mean it has to live always in the place that it has birthed and grown. In fact, it probably won't. But to get legs and to really root into the organization, it needs to be aligned to close to the highest priority that the company has. And it needs to have air cover, which means generally budget. So that's like my two things that I help people understand is just like values driven by the business and eyeballs. So that's what I do. There's a million more things you have to take into consideration, but those are like two nuggets.
Yeah, that really resonates with me. I think I'm not recommending this for everybody. One of the things we did at Intuit was that we moved community around every 6 months. And
started, 6 months.
Because the founder, Scott Cook, really wanted, it's funny, he called it user contribution systems, user created content woven into the fabric of each group. And so his initiative, you know, his idea was really wild to, you know, take the team and move it around so that product starts using ideation. So support thinks of it as a, you know, something they can use, and as marketing can use it as part of the, we didn't use the term flywheel then, but that's what he meant. So.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think that's super interesting. That could be a bit traumatic for different organizations, but I think that now, if you think about it, I try to sell the vision, and I bet you do too, as like there's a center of excellence, you know, that the community like can have this really strong core that it meant to serve. It's meant to serve product. It's meant to serve support. It's meant to serve sales and marketing and customer support. And then in exchange, the customers get a ton of value back. So that's the vision I try to sell now, but ultimately it does have to live somewhere. And so hopefully where it does live, it's you're able to sell that vision that you have to serve those other parts of the business instead of moving them around. But I do think it's true. I moved. I uprooted the community at Salesforce, moved it into product, which seems a little strange, but based on a variety of things I don't need to go into now, that made the most sense for the community that time, goal alignment, engagement, and just like, and prioritization really. And it just thrived. I mean, I've never seen such hockey stick growth when you put your community in the right place where people get it and they give much more than they expect to get. And then it's just insane the amount of growth that happened over time when you get that right.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I think it's great to see that you guys were in product at one point because part of it is, sorry, go ahead.
No, still, it's still in product really.
Yeah. Well, I like that because A, product gets money. You know, we talk about product-led growth also, and just, you know, it's a great way to weave in, you know, user-created content into that whole experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, and before you go on, it's just to add to that, one of the things that I remember back in the day that was like, that's another tipping point for my career, you asked, you know, early on, that was another one, is that the community was so in love with our product and so in love with our product managers that they had such a voice in our community, even in the early days. There was always from the top down a desire for customer input into the product, that when I moved myself out of marketing, and I love marketing, and there is a more genius marketing team at Salesforce from the early days. But when I moved myself out and I was sitting at the table with these product managers that were like gods, it just was like all of a sudden I became so much more authentic. And I became so much more invested in their success, in the community member's success. And I was like, not marketing. Like, it was nothing to do with lead gen or, demand or marketing messaging. It was like, oh, you're truly invested in the product. You're sitting next to the product manager. So that was a really killer reason why I think there was a huge amount of success. So that's another thing I just wanted to mention.
No, it's a great insight because the motivation of a product manager versus how a marketing person is going to get recognized is really different.
Right. Very true. Very true.
Yeah. No, the product team, it's just seeing community integrated into products and then also product team that they're constantly interacting with customers. That's, I kind of kid around about when I talk to marketers and I want to be kind of my New York self, I ask them, when's the last time you spoke to a customer? And it's not always consistent.
Yeah.
So when you think about different disciplines, you know, community and advocacy, you know, there's Influtive came out with some research where they showed that I think it was 45% of, you know, companies are thinking about merging those two groups. What do you see happening there? How do you think they should be in the same group? Do you see the alignment between community members and champions and advocacy and advocates?
Yeah, I think it makes things easier when they're sitting side by side. Definitely, but that doesn't mean they have to. But I guess the bottom line is they need to be very aware of one another. They need to work extremely well together and they need to feel harmonious so that the customer doesn't have any idea or need to know where the organization is that it lives. Because that when that happens, it feels very org chart being pushed out to your customers. Because while I think advocacy and we're sort of just another word for community, honestly. Even with advocacy, these words trip me up all the time when I'm trying to describe this concept I'm about to describe. They all are just activities that you want to present to your customers to participate with your brand and your company. And they have different alignments, you know, different, more traditionally advocacy elements are aligned to different goals and strategies. And more traditional community engagement have a little bit of a different alignment to different goals and strategies, but they are all about giving a voice and giving an opportunity for people to engage with your brand. And so I think sometimes people try to smush them all into one. And so by advocating that they are in one organization doesn't mean they shouldn't be smushed into one. They need to have their ability to breathe and be aligned to the right types of goals and businesses. But they need to share elements that make it super impactful, like badging, for instance. You know, having a separate badging system for advocacy activities and a separate badging system for community activities really just hinders what you're trying to accomplish. If those things are together, then you can earn badges for doing references and you can earn badges for doing posts and answering questions or for voting on ideas or for doing a review. That's when things get really interesting and it creates this sense of like you can actually move back and forth between the two instead of being like you people do these things and you people do these things. It starts to feel like we as a company want to just reward and recognize you for doing great things with us. And we are advocating for you instead of you are advocating for us. And so I find that that's how I like to talk about these things. Now, that's why I said there, it's easier if they're all in one group. And I actually am seeing that happen and it's awesome. And there's a pillar for advocacy. There's a pillar for community. And then there might be customer journeys pillar and like some other pillars that all wrap up into something maybe like customer marketing or customer and community marketing or whatever you want to call it. And that's working out extremely well. But I do know parts of the businesses that are the advocacy folks and the community folks are getting smarter about each other, and they're bringing each other into the conversations a lot earlier so that they don't try to create these siloed environments where, you know, you earn points here, you earn points here, and it's like, you're making me choose. So that was a long answer to that, but this is a very complicated, newly emerging thing that I'm trying to myself find new ways to describe this. I created this kind of janky graph where it's like a circle with advocacy activities and a circle with customer or community activities and like barely a Venn diagram, quite honestly, because there's hardly people that do all the things, but it allows you to like move. Anyway, if I feel brave, I'll share it with you, but really it's kind of ugly and it's a tough concept to get across.
No, I can visualize it and you know, when I've heard you speak about it in the past too, you've made a really good point that the advocate and the community champion can be different. And
definitely.
Sometimes we try and lump them together. Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, I have been spending some time right now and I have spent some time pulling those programs apart because what ends up happening is when they do that, it doesn't really serve anybody. It's like jack of all trade, master of none. Is that how that goes? I'm really terrible at these type of things. But I think that's what it is that you like jam these programs together. You take like a super user program and you jam it together with an advocacy program. And all of a sudden you have all these people who like, you know, they're great and they want to do stuff for your company, but you've got people in there that are motivated by different things. You've got super users that are in there motivated by product engagement with the product and having a voice and really at building, you know, there's like a different set of motivations and they are critical in nature. You know, they don't speak all wonderful, and that's what you'd be. You need them. And then you've got these other people in there, which are more advocate-based, which they are building their brand and trying to maybe establish themselves more as an advocate of your brand. And they want to be rewarded and recognized with speaking opportunities or press outlets or, you know, those different types of things. And so creating one program where they're all jammed into one doesn't really do anything for anyone. So I'm working with a couple of companies right now to parse those apart. Don't lose the value of either. They're both excellent, very necessary, but they're very distinct in my mind. And not distinct that they should know about each other in the ways that I was saying, like share the things that make sense, like profile or something, but are rewarded and recognized in different ways. And their goals are also aligned to different things. Maybe one is more aligned to business, like new business. One is maybe more aligned to attrition or product adoption. And so making better decisions about what these programs are and aligning them that way. That's my actual very passionate about that because I see that happen. And then I see these programs, they die because they don't offer the value like anyone. It's like, you don't even know me. I'm sitting in a program with someone else that's not at all like me. That doesn't feel right. I'm at the wrong party, really.
I like that analogy at the wrong party.
Yeah.
So we talk advocates and there's community members. Mm-hmm. Are there other, you know, it's funny that you mentioned community too. Is that the right word? And I just wrote down these human driven activities, right? So there's advocates, there's community.
Yeah.
You've worked a lot with user groups too. I'm just curious mm-hmm. how you see user groups fitting into this puzzle.
Yeah. I mean, I think user groups is a tricky one. I think what I try to get away from with most people when they're thinking about a menu of ways to engage is that it is a step function to a top. There's no top. There's no like pyramid. I hate pyramids when it comes to community. And here I am a trailblazer. Like I get it. We're blazing trails, but like it's not about the only like one program means you're at the top. There can be many, many, many different peaks and you gain success at those peaks. But a lot of people build these programs where all roads lead to a super user program. And the reality is, like, if I'm using me as an example, I don't want to be a super user. Like, I'm a super happy running a user group and networking and connecting. And I want to be rewarded and recognized for being that person. I don't want to have to be treated as a second-class citizen because I'm not trying to be an MVP or a super user. And so I try to get people away from thinking all roads lead to this one program. Instead, reward and recognize people for all the places that they've achieved that are helping you accomplish your goal as a company, and let them be fluid and move from each one. So they're all connected. So it's not like a person that is in the user group program doesn't know anything about the advocacy programs, or people that are in the advocacy program have no idea about the super user program. They should all be knitted together so that you can just like see all the things that you can offer me. And then I choose my own adventure and my adventure changes. I might one day be a super user and then I get promoted and all of a sudden I don't have time to answer as many questions in the community, but I love the brand. So I become an advocate, you know, like, all right, I'm on stage now. I've grown my career that now I get to be on stage and talk to the executives about the power of that brand to my business. So I just, all of these things are not like steps in one direction. So that's the way I would feel about user groups is it is one amazing option to then achieve whatever goals you're trying to do as a business, as well as that person. And it's great because a user group leader, depending on how you build a program, doesn't need to be a super expert. They just are an expert connector. They have a desire to network with the, you know, other customers to make each other be successful. That doesn't require expert knowledge. So I can get involved that way. So that's kind of how I feel about those type of programs. Clearly, you can see I had passion for this, but it's confusing because the way people think about this, and just try to break apart the way people think about this.
Yeah, no, I've seen too many summits, too many mountains.
So many mountains. So many summits. So many pointed triangles. It's like, now I get it if you're trying to describe potentially the amount of people that are in each of those programs. I'm cool with it. Cool with that. You know, I'm cool with like, yeah, in a super user program, you don't have very many people in it, depending on how you build it. You have more people that are maybe in a user group program, leaders. Maybe you have a lot of people in an advocacy program. So I'm okay talking about it that way when it comes to like the amount of people that are in maybe each of these types of programs, but it's not a ladder. It's not a ladder up kind of thing.
Yeah. And how do you find companies receptive to this approach? And is there like a model that you use for them to explain this to them?
Yeah, for sure people are, but it's not, generally I get pulled in to these type of sophisticated scenarios after it's done, you know, so not done, but like it's all happening. Yeah. So it's kind of a hot mess really maybe. And so, but everybody knows it, they feel it. That's why I get involved is like, okay, how do we make this feel more cohesive? How do we make these programs more successful? And that's when I come in and try to sell this vision of, you know, what are step functions to get there? Because it's hard to get from like a lot of things to a perfectly crafted trailblazer identity, you know, like if I'm using my own world. And so there's many different ways in which you take disconnected silos and start to move them in a place where they all feel connected. So I think people are usually receptive because they're recognizing that they're not gaining the momentum and the power behind the programs. And that's when I come in. Rarely do I get inserted at the very beginning. So like maybe the very beginning of the community, but there's already advocacy opportunities happening. So I'm like, it's never just the very, very ground stage. So there's always selling that goes into it. But I'm finding, I don't know if this is just the evolution of the industry, is that it's like I was saying earlier, that advocacy leaders are so much more understanding and receptive to community and community to advocacy. So it's not a fight anymore. Whereas it used to feel a little contentious, like I own the customer. We own the customer. It's like, no, nobody owns the customer. Like we're all here to serve them. Nobody owns them. So it's a changing dynamic. And I think that's just coming from just this wave of maturity when it comes to advocacy and community.
Yeah. I mean, I remember early in my career when I was doing community stuff, advocacy and I had a healthy tension, shall we say.
Oh, yeah. Me too. Yeah. It was never good. It was like, it was just always like, who owns what? Like, that's not a question that you should be asking. Like, that's already the wrong question. That's very like inside out. And I was always outside in. I'm like, you need to turn this around. Yes, I agree. Lots of tension, but I'm not finding that as much anymore. I mean, it's hard. I still have run into it a bit because people still want to know what's inside their box. But it's becoming a little bit more fluid,
Yeah. One thing that's helped companies that I've worked with is the shared metrics model, like having metric across, you know, so a lot of companies still, you know, like I go in and they're like, well, you got a community here and advocacy here. And we both have the classic story is I like to tell is I was talking to this woman, Lisa, who's a CMO at Google. And she told me once when I worked with her that one group would go in, say, Wilder's team. And we'd say, here are our engagement metrics. And then the next group would go in and say, here's our engagement metrics. And then the next group. And we're all proud of our metrics, but we're all talking about the same people, the same customers.
Yeah, right. That's so true. Yeah, and I think that that's actually a problem too that I found is, we fell victim to this at Salesforce big time, is that there gets to be an echo chamber effect when you're building all these programs, but you're hitting up the same customers. It's like, what exactly are you all trying to do? So you gotta like, I feel like the beauty of advocacy is you get to expand out. You have like a larger pool that you could bring in. And then you, and community, you know, you can't build the same advocacy programs with the same exact community members. It's just, then you're just talking to yourself all the damn time. And then you're just competing with each other of like overhitting the same people, getting better rewards over here. And they compete with the awards you're getting over here. It's like, oh my God, it gets, and so it's like that's a problem. And I see that is, you know, as it gets to be, if you have a community, it gets to be easy to tap them. It's a little harder to go outside the echo chamber and bring in new people to the echo chamber. So, that's, I think, what ends up happening. You're right. It's just, you all end up hitting the same people with the same things and just different programs. Like customers are like, don't you guys know what's going on in there? Like it ends up just looking, you look silly. The customer's like, wait, yep. That, you know, that person gave me this and that person gave me this. Like what's going on? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it's embarrassing. I mean, when yes. You like talk to a customer and they're like, hey, aren't you talking to your other team here?
Yeah, that is bad. Like I never wanted that to happen. Yeah, I agree.
So another thing that, you know, Salesforce is infamous for is their education experience, Trailblazer, yeah. Trailhead.
Sure.
I'm just curious of how you're thinking about how education or online learning should be integrated with community.
Yeah, it should, number one. No, I think, that's done answering that question. No, it is definitely more nuanced than that. But Salesforce is a perfect example because it wasn't always like that. I already explained, interestingly enough, I started in education, moved into creating the community. And then at the end, the tail end of my career, I actually got reorged and brought into the education organization again. That was Trailhead. And then very quickly after that overcame paid learning and so an academy. So here we were all back together again. And the reason that happened is that Trailhead was basically starting to create its own community itself. It had badges. It had such an exciting feel, a new way to learn, democratized and free. And it was really exciting. People were getting extremely jazzed, but they had no way to connect with mentorship and connect with opportunities because that community was separate. So you try to do things we were just talking about. You try to do them separate. Hard to have those common goals at a giant organization like Salesforce. So instead it was like, okay, Erica, come over and let's do this. Like, let's really do this. Let's connect. Let's learn. Let's earn, and then let's connect all in one umbrella. So that's what we did, is we brought it over so we could say people need to learn for free, learn from Salesforce, learn from each other. Let's earn certifications and badges, and then let's connect people with each other and let's give them opportunities for growth and jobs and you know, career advancement. And that is when like the third, we've already talked about the first tipping point for me, and then the second one was product. This was the third. This was like when it was just went to the moon. This is like when it like still gives me the chills, which is so nerdy because like this is done for me. But like that's really when the world fully connected was we take these people, you have these incredibly engaged people, you connect them with other people and you mentor and grow them and they get jobs they never thought they could have dreamed having. You know, so it becomes like far more than about product, far more than about a piece of software and tech, and it becomes about emotional connection to their careers and their lives. And so that's like the very, very far reaching future, but it all comes together with learning and connecting because people just want to get their questions answered. They just want to connect with other people to help them grow. And so keeping those things separate, it's just like, it doesn't make any sense to me at all. Like, and when you look at their profile, back to the profile, you want to see the groups they belong to, the certifications they've got, the skills they've earned, all in one place. because that makes a total picture of who that person is, and especially when they're trying to connect with other people. And so I know that's like a dream state, but at a minimum, put them in one place, be nice to your customers, and like whether or not you can have this fully integrated Trailblazer Trailhead experience, that can come later, but at minimum, start to track that direction by at least like putting education inside your community infrastructure and work towards having single profile so that these things can feel connected. And at least you can sign in and take a course in the same way you sign in and engage on a post or join a group. Do these things early and often, make them look the same way, make them feel the same way. So they're just not like two giant different experiences. And I promise you that you will have escape velocity. Like this is something that people don't do. And I cannot understand it, because this type of learning and connecting, they're extremely powerful together. So, and you know, I had to learn it the hard way too. So this is just like something I'm just immediately like, let's pull these people in immediately to the conversation.
When you're a pioneer, you have to learn the hard way. You take some knocks.
Oh, I took a lot of knocks, let me tell you. Like I luckily have a great hairstylist that dyed my hair, because man, did I have a lot of gray hair from my experience over there. But yeah, it really is an unbelievable thing. And I think this is actually another one of those that's trending in such a good direction. There's not a lot of arguments when it comes to this anymore. I think people, you know, it's hard to prioritize things like putting an identity first. That really does slow momentum down when you're launching learning experiences and community experiences. But when you're tracking towards the same goal, it's just really amazing. And you can show shared value to each of these organizations. I'm not finding as much arguments and pushback as I was in the past.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely seeing companies open to it. I haven't seen too many companies actually doing it. And then there's obviously platform issues as well.
Yeah, for sure. But I think the platforms themselves are working, they're being smarter. So you've got companies like Incited or Higher Logic Vanilla that have integrations, some pre-built integrations with some of the bigger learning platforms like Skilljar, for example. They're starting to think about it. It's still not perfect, you know, but it's definitely getting smarter. Or then just that in general, single sign-on is very, very difficult to achieve. But getting people to think about this early is better, because they have less platforms to think about. Waiting too long, all of a sudden it becomes really daunting to try to figure out how to hook in 4, 5, 6 different types of platforms into one login or one identity. But yeah, there's platform issues for sure. But there's things you can hack, honestly, that work really well. And even something as simple as unifying a header, so that when you are on a community and you see all the important elements to that community, one of which is learning, even if you click on that and you open a new tab and go to the learning platform, even if you actually have to log in again, it's still just like a step in the right direction to put it under one umbrella. That's like as an easy, just low hanging fruit. And that's something people are still not even doing. It's like, they're still just not, they're like, oh, that's the community. This is learning. It's like, no, actually the customer doesn't care. The customer wants to ask questions, take training, read help articles. I want to do all of that in one place. So if you can't convince everybody to align perfectly, at least just put them in one place and then work towards a more seamless experience down the line. So, and then platforms are doing a better job of doing federated search. So at least you can search up those, plug in and search up the content. Yes, these are steps in the right direction to like the dream state of everything being fully unified.
Yeah, that's so, you know, we just launched the CLG campus, and that's one of the things we're trying to do since we started day one, as opposed to inheriting, you know, all these different platforms. And we're leaning into cohort learning as well. So it's, you have this group of people who are together learning, and then they can move into that kind of community peer-to-peer interaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool.
So I want to be sensitive to your time and everybody else's time. So is there anything I haven't asked you today that you're like, damn, Wilder, why didn't you ask me?
Oh my gosh. I'm sure that we could, I know that you and I could carry on for 4 hours talking about community. I suppose you can go listen to my podcast for 97 bajillion hours of hearing me talk about all the things. But no, I think we hit on the important ones. I think, I guess just if I could leave one thing is just don't, if you're new to starting community or advocacy or both, or if you're trying to reinvent yourself, don't skip over the alignment part of the business. Don't forget that this should be pulled up and aligned at the highest possible level and treated like a strategic business initiative. Don't treat this as like a thing off to the side. Find out the big business goals. Find out what the company goals are and show the alignment at the top level so that you can be treated the way you deserve to be treated, which is a top level strategic business initiative. And you do that by really understanding those top level goals and showing the connection and the value. I just say that as much as I can, because I think as leaders in both of these spaces, I feel like we need to level people up as much as we can and get people away from speaking in an echo chamber way, in the words we like to use, and start speaking the language of business. And then mapping it to what we know are the values of the things we bring to the table. So any opportunity I get to just punt that out, I will, because I just think it's really important. I want our industry to keep thriving and going in the right direction. And this, I think, is one of the biggest things that will do that.
Yeah. Now, you know, I've talked to a few people who either you've worked with or you've mentored and things like that. And I think that's one thing that's extremely valuable. And I see you're passionate about that. You bring, you know, there's many things you bring to the table, but one is that experience and helping somebody who's maybe earlier in their career figuring out the organizational alignment. So
yeah,
that's awesome.
Yes.
I also like to ask one last question. So who or what has influenced you the most in terms of your professional career? It could be a person,
boy.
It could be a book, it could be a having coffee with somebody, and it's just like, wow.
Oh my God, Scott, are you kidding me? This is pressure. The pressure. Weirdly, I'd say it's probably a person that was the biggest negative. I'm not even going to talk about names, but like it's the person that pushed back on me the most, that did not believe in me the most, that did not believe in my vision the most. And because that just is my personality, and I'll be like, I know I'm right. I know I know that you're going to be wrong. And now I'm just going to do everything I possibly can to prove that you're wrong. So I'd say, weirdly, it's an individual that early days was a big naysayer of me, me personally, but maybe me more or less like the vision that I had. Because that made me get super crystal clear on what it is I was trying to do, why I was trying to do it. And so this is like the early day things you can hear me talk about now is like getting crystal clear on the why, the what, the how, you know, and all of those elements to make certain that I proved that person totally wrong. So that's probably the person, as weird, that seems super negative, but at the same time, that's just who I am. I'll prove it that it's wrong. So I'll prove that person wrong. And what's wonderful is that person did many, many years later admit that they were wrong, which is really even better. But I really do attribute a lot of the success to that moment for me.
That's great. I mean, there's a real valuable lesson in there. It's like, not everybody's going to, you know, praise you. And so, you know, in those moments when, you know, you're challenged, you have a choice. You can walk away. Yeah. They can push you away. You can say, hey, I'm, you know, so that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. Thanks.
So Erica, everybody wants to know where they can find you. So talk, just maybe spend a minute about where they can find you, your podcast, et cetera.
So as long as you know how to spell my name the proper way, which I always say it's Erica with a C and it's cool with a K and it's K-U-H-L, then you can find me any which way. So my Twitter, which I'm super boring on Twitter these days, but Twitter, LinkedIn, my website are all that. And then my podcast, you probably could search me up that way too and pull up podcasts. But my podcast is specifically named, and you can listen to the podcast to figure out why it's named that way, is In Before the Lock, which is IB4TL. So IB4TLFM, there's literally 97 episodes as of today of me flapping my mouth on all things community, all sorts of cool resources, all for free. And it is a passion and joy that I get to do that, just like you get to do this podcast with your customer-led group. So I think that's best. I think that's everything you would need of me. You can watch some super embarrassing videos if you search my name that way. You'll find all sorts of goodies that way.
I saw some oldie but goodie old videos.
Oh, I know. It's not pretty. I can really thank Bill Johnston for some of the early day horrifying videos of me. He has some doozies because the two of us have been at this for many decades. So he has some real good ones. Don't dig too deep, people. Don't dig too deep.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to know how to find them, no.
So
thank you again, Erica. This has been great. Thank you, everybody, for joining Customer-Led Groove. Thank you again for joining Customer-Led Groove. You can find us on Apple and Google and Amazon and Alexa. And, you know, usually at the end of this, I like to say, don't worry about liking us. Just listen to this and play it forward and share it with somebody else. Thank you.
Thank you again for joining Customer-Led Groove. Remember, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on the CLG campus. Feel free to rate us, follow us, and leave a comment on any of those platforms. We hope to see you again soon when we're back in the Customer-Led Groove.